The Dhamma Talk, delivered by Venerable Usilananda at the Tathagata Meditation Center, San Jose, California, Special Retreat of November 1998.
In my talk, I said something about latency of defilements. Latency of defilements in the objects. But I didn't explain it, so you may want to know more about that. There are two kinds of latency of mental defilements. The first one is latency in the mental continuum of beings, and the other is latency in the objects. Understand the latency of mental defilements, we must understand the mental defilements first. So what are the mental defilements? Now, they are called mental defilements because they smear the mind, or they make our minds dirty. So they are called mental defilements. But the explanation given in the commentaries is that they are the ones that afflict the mind or that torment the mind. So they are tormentors of mind, or those that afflict the mind. So they are called kilesa in Pali. Those that defile, or those that are defiled. So this word, mental defilement, comes to be used for the word kilesa in Pali. Now there are 10 mental defilements, or 10 kilesas. So they begin with greed, hate, delusion, pride, wrong view, doubt, okay, yeah, and then wrong view and doubt. So the other four are sloth, and then restlessness, and shamelessness in doing unwholesome deeds, and fearlessness in doing unwholesome deeds. You don't need to know all these 10 one by one. So please know that they are just the mental states that make our minds dirty. So whenever one or more of these mental states arise in our minds, then our minds are said to be impure. We are said to have unwholesome mind or unwholesome consciousness. And the aim of, the ultimate aim of vipassana is to get rid of these mental defilements. Now, purification of beings or purification of mind simply means eradication of these mental defilements. Once the mental defilements are eradicated and they no longer arise in the mind, then mind becomes totally pure. Sometimes these mental defilements really arise in our minds. For example, when we are angry, the anger arises in our mind. When we are attached to something, then there is greed or attachment in our mind, and so on. So when they get the necessary conditions, then they arise in our minds. Now, when they arise in our minds, we can do something so that they just stay there at the arising stage, and they do not proceed to the stage of breaking the precepts or transgression.
Hey man,
suppose I am angry with the person. So when I'm angry with him, then anger has arisen in my mind. I can control that anger and not let it to reach the stage of transgression. That means to quarrel with him, to hit him, or even to kill him. So I can control my anger not to reach that stage. So there are now, we see two stages of mental defilements that arise in our mind, and then that reach the stage of action, doing something depending on that mental defilement.
We
do not live in our mind constantly, not always. Only once in a while they arise in our minds. So when they do not arise in our minds, where do they live? We are said to be lying dormant in our minds. But that does not mean that they have arisen and then they lie under the surface or something like that. What it means is there is a liability for them to arise. So there is a potential for them to arise when the conditions are met. Three levels of mental defilements: the latent level, and then arising or coming up level, that means coming up to the surface, and then acting level or transgression level. So there are these three levels of mental defilements. Three levels. The latent level is the most difficult to destroy or to eradicate. Since there are three levels of mental defilements, Buddha gave us three weapons to deal with each one of these levels. And these three weapons are sila, moral purity, samadhi, concentration, and wisdom. I mean, panya, wisdom. When you take precepts and you really keep them, then you will not reach the transgression stage. Even though you are angry, you will not do anything out of anger. You will not kill, or even if you are attached to something, if you really desire something, you will not take it forcefully, you will not steal it, because you have taken the precepts. So taking the precepts helps you to deal with that mental defilements at transgression level. And actually, that is the easiest of the three to get rid of, I mean, to prevent. You just take the precepts and you keep them, and even though you are attached to something, you will not take it by force, you will not steal it. Even though you are angry, you will not act upon anger and fight with the person or even kill him. because you have taken upon yourself the precepts of not killing, not stealing, and so on. So, sila can help us to avoid transgression, but it cannot help us to prevent mental defilements from arising in our minds. Now, please note that sila is actually the control of bodily actions and vocal actions, or sila controls your body and your speech, not your mind. Although mind is involved when we keep precepts, when we try to avoid killing and so on, the sila's task is to control the bodily actions and vocal actions, to prevent mental defilement from reaching the arising stage. We need to do some other thing, and that is samadhi, concentration or meditation. Because meditation deals with our mind. Now, when you meditate, you just sit and you try to control your mind, or you try to be mindful of the object at the present moment. So, by the practice of meditation, we will be able to prevent the mental defilements from reaching the arising stage. Two kinds of meditation, samatha or tranquility meditation and vipassana meditation. So both meditations can help us to keep these mental defilements away from the stage of arising. But that keeping them away is not absolute or not total, not permanent. So by the practice of samatha meditation or vipassana meditation, we are able to keep them away for just for some time. We cannot keep them away altogether from our minds. Okay. A person practices samatha meditation and he gets jhanas and abhinyas or supernormal knowledges. So by the practice of samatha and by the attainment of jhanas and supernormal knowledges, he is able to keep these mental defilements away from a longer period of times, maybe months or even years. But they are not eradicated. They are the mental defilements are not destroyed altogether. And so when they meet with conditions, necessary conditions, then these mental defilements will arise in their minds again. So in one of his past existences, Bodhisattva was a hermit. So as a hermit, he lived in the Himalayas and he practiced meditation and he got jhanas and supernormal powers. So one day he went to the city and met the king, and the king was pleased with him. And so the king asked him to stay at the royal garden. And also the king offered food to him every day. So the hermit went to the palace every day to accept food. One time there was a rebellion and the king had to go out and suppress it. So before he went out, he asked his queen to take care of the hermit. So in his absence, the hermit went to the palace to receive food as usual. And whenever he went through the air and he entered through the window. So one day, the queen bathed and then put on very, very fine and smooth clothes, garments. And she was waiting for the hermit to come. Maybe she was lying down. Then the hermit came and he entered through the window. And when the queen heard the noise of his robes, she caught up, and unfortunately the garment fell off, and the hermit saw the exposed body of the queen. And so when he saw the queen in that condition, the mental defilements, long suppressed, just came up to him. So he was not able to control himself. So by the help of samatha meditation, one can keep the mental defilements away for some time only, and not for all times. Like in this story, these mental defilements can just arise when there are conditions for them. This reminds me of a story that was told in Burma, and that was popular in Burma. Now, about 200 years ago, there was a king, and he had a minister who was very clever. So that king had a cat. He trained his cat so well that when he did the service to the Buddha statue, when he bowed down to the statue and did the recitation, the cat hold the candle for him in his hands. So he was very proud of that cat, and so he told about the cat to the minister, because he expected the minister to praise the cat. But the minister said, "Your Majesty, that is because the cat has not seen what he likes." So the king was displeased. But at night, that minister caught a mouse during the day, and he took it to where the king was doing his service to the Buddha statue, and then he released the mouse. So the mouse ran in front of the cat, and as soon as the cat saw the mouse, he threw away the candle and ran after the mouse. Okay, vipassana can also prevent the mental defilements from reaching the stage of arising. Now, when you make note of the objects, or when you are mindful of the objects, or when you practice mindfulness, mental defilements do not get chance to enter your mind. So when you practice vipassana meditation, you are able to keep the mental defilements away, but just for a moment. The moment you stop practicing mindfulness, they come in, they can come in. So by the practice of samatha meditation or vipassana meditation, people can keep these mental defilements away from them for some time only, or for a moment only, not for good. Now, the deepest level, or the latent level of the mental defilements, can be eradicated by enlightenment only, or by the path consciousness only. So when a person becomes enlightened or when a person attains enlightenment, a type of consciousness arises in that person, a type of consciousness that he has never experienced before. So that consciousness is called path consciousness. And that consciousness has the power to destroy the mental defilements altogether so that they do not arise again in his mind. So that is total, total abandonment or eradication of mental defilements. So the eradication of mental defilements or the removal of the deepest level of the mental defilement can be achieved only through the path consciousness. But in order to reach the path consciousness, what must one do? Practice vipassana. So vipassana, strictly speaking, vipassana does not eradicate mental defilements altogether, but the path consciousness arises as an outcome of vipassana practice. Without vipassana, there can be no path consciousness, and so there can be no attainment of enlightenment. So in order to deal with the deepest level of mental defilements, in order to get rid of the deepest level of mental defilements, we practice vipassana meditation. So the mental defilements and the deepest level or the latent level are the most difficult to get rid of. And they are said to be latent in our mental continuum. So they are not the ones that has already arisen, but they are something like a potential in our minds, say, for them to arise. So we can take an example of a box of matches. Now you keep the box of matches from young children, from small children. Why? Because there's a possibility that they may play with it and they may get burned. Or in other words, there is potential fire in the box of matches. In the same way, although mental defilements are not always present, not always arising in our minds, there is a potential in our minds for them to arise. And that potential, or that liability, is what we call the latent stage or latent states. So they are they have not reached the stage of arising and continuing, but there is a tendency or the potential for them to arise, and that is what we call the latent states. Can we say that fire exists in the matchbox? No. If it does, it will be burning. So fire is not existent in the matchbox, but there is a liability that when someone strikes the match, the fire will be produced. So in the same way, mental defilements not always exist in our minds, but there is a liability that they will arise when the necessary conditions are met. So although they arise only when the conditions are met, we say that they are with us, or we are with them. Because so long as we have not destroyed them altogether, so long as we have not eradicated them, we are said to have these mental defilements. Say a person who smokes, so although at the moment he is not smoking, if you ask him, do you smoke, then he will say, I do, because he has this habit of smoking and he has not given up this smoking. So he will say, I smoke. So in the same way, if somebody asks us whether we have mental defilements, we will say yes. Although at this very moment, I hope we have no mental defilements in our minds. We are practicing Dhamma. I'm giving a Dhamma talk and you are listening to the Dhamma talk. And so there are no mental defilements in our minds. But if somebody asks us, are you free from mental defilements? We'll say no. Lying dormant in our minds is what we call latency in the mental continuum. So the mental defilements, although they do not reach the real stage of arising, they are said to be lying dormant in our minds. And that lying dormant is what we call the level of latency or latency in the mental continuum of beings. Another kind of latency, and that is latency in the objects. Now, we encounter many kinds of objects, material objects as well as mental objects. So whatever the object is, if we are not mindful, we, as it were, put the mental defilements into those objects. That means, suppose I see a beautiful object, so I like it, and so I have attachment to that object. So when I have attachment to that object, it is actually I am injecting these mental defilements into that object. So that is what we call latency of mental defilements in the object. Actually, mental defilements are in the mind and not in the object. But since I have taken this object as a desirable object and I have an attachment to this object, it is as though I have put or inject the mental defilements in this object. So once mental defilement is put in the object, it stays there always. That means every time you encounter this object, it comes along with that mental defilement you have put in it. So that is called latency in the objects. And when we have injected mental defilements into the objects, since they are mental defilements, they lead us to action. And mental defilements lead us to unwholesome actions. Since I am attached to this object, I will protect it, and even at the risk of my life, I will protect it, something like that. Or, and if somebody comes, and then I will fight with him or something like that. So it leads to action, the mental defilement or the attachment to the object or aversion to the object. So these lead to the action, and these actions are called karma. So when there is karma, there is the result of karma as the rebirth in this case, rebirth in woeful states. So every time we we put the mental defilement in the object, we are prolonging our stay in the samsara. We are creating our own suffering, because the result of akusala is always undesirable or unpleasant. So we must understand that every time we put a mental defilement in the object, we are prolonging our stay in the samsara. The practice of mindfulness or the practice of vipassana can help us to prevent injecting mental defilements in the objects. Because when we are mindful and we say seeing, 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 or hearing, hearing, and so on, we do not take this object as desirable or undesirable. So when we do not take this as desirable or undesirable, we will not be attached to it, or we will not have aversion towards it. So the practice of mindfulness can help us not to put the mental defilements into the objects. So when you practice vipassana meditation, you practice mindfulness, and in the beginning, you may not even see the object clearly, but as your practice strengthens, as your concentration becomes stronger, you will be able to see the objects clearly, and you will be able to see the conditionality of the objects, and you will be able to see that these objects come and go, and so you see their impermanence and so on. So when you see these characteristics of all conditioned phenomena, that is impermanence, suffering, and non-soul nature of things, you will not be attached to that object, or you will not hate that object and so on. And so you are able to avoid putting mental defilements into that object. So when you do not put in mental defilements in the object, there will be no acting depending on the mental defilements, simply because there are no mental defilements. So when there are no acting, when there is no acting, that means when there is no action, when there is no karma, there will be no result of karma. And so the future lives or future aggregates that would happen if you cannot prevent putting mental defilements in the objects will not arise. So that is, you are cutting the flow of rebirths. So you are cutting short the samsara, your samsara. So with the help of vipassana, we can prevent putting mental defilements in the objects, or we can prevent the latency of mental defilements in the objects. And as we go along, we'll be able to prevent this more and more. And when our practice of vipassana matures, then as a result of the practice of vipassana, or as the outcome of vipassana, the path consciousness will arise. So when path consciousness arises, then it is able to do away with the deepest level of mental defilements. So only when path consciousness arises can all mental defilements be eradicated, so that they do not arise again in that person. And when we say the mental defilements are destroyed or removed or eradicated, we mean that they are rendered incapable of arising again. Not that they are there and then we destroy them. When mental defilements arise in our mind, there can be no vipassana, or there can be no path consciousness. So when there is no path consciousness, there can be no eradication of mental defilements. So the eradication of mental defilements really means rendering them incapable of arising again, arising in the future. So that is what we should understand by the expression removal of mental defilements or abandonment of mental defilements or eradication of mental defilements. Now, when you are able to avoid putting mental defilements in the objects, it is because you are able to see the object as it is without any additions of your own. So you see the object and you take the object as it is, and not taking it as it is beautiful object or it is an ugly object or this object I like or this object I don't like. So without putting anything onto the object, you just take the object as it is. That is why you are able to avoid injecting mental defilements into the object. And that being able to take the object as it is described as an achievement of the yogis. Now, Buddha taught that the things are impermanent. But if we think an object is permanent, that means we are adding something unreal to that object. Although the object is impermanent, we are putting the permanency onto the object. So in that case, we are taking the object not as it is, but as we like it to be. So when we take something impermanent to be permanent, we are adding this permanency, which is unreal, to the object. But when you are able to see, to apply mindfulness to the object, you are able to avoid that. So, and that ability to avoid adding anything unreal onto the object is described as a great achievement of a yogi. Now, when we think an object to be permanent, which is really impermanent, that means we are not satisfied with this object. And so we are taking something that is real, taking away something real from the object. We want to take this impermanency out of the object, and then in its place, we put in the permanency. So when we think, or when we take some object to be some impermanent object to be permanent, we are in one way taking away something that is real from the object. So there are two things: adding something unreal to the object and taking away something real from the object. And I think that is what we always do. (Clears throat) We always put something unreal onto the objects, and we want to take away what is real from the objects, because we want things to be beautiful, things to be permanent, and so on. And so to avoid adding something unreal onto the objects, and to avoid taking something real away from the objects, is a very difficult one. And it can be achieved only through mindfulness meditation, only through constant observation, only through vipassana. And we are able to prevent adding something unreal and to take away something real from the object. We are following the advice given by the Buddha. The advice given by the Buddha is, let there be seeing with regard to what is seen, and so on. So in other words, that means take the object as it is without any additions. Buddha gave this advice to two people, one on different occasions. So once an ascetic came to the Buddha. He wanted to learn from the Buddha, and so it is said that he walked the whole night. When he reached the monastery, Buddha had already gone out to the village for alms. So he asked the monks where the Buddha was, and when they told him that Buddha was on his alms round, he went after the Buddha and sought him out. And when he met the Buddha, he just said, "Pandit, please teach me something in brief so that I can practice." And Buddha said, "It's not a time to ask a question or to answer a question. I'm on the alms round, so you just wait." But he was persistent. He insisted that Buddha gave him the answer for three times. So after three times, he said, "Bhante, we do not know whether I will die next moment or not, or you will die next moment or not. So please teach me now so that I can practice." So you know why, when going on alms round, Buddha just gave this advice, very short advice. And that has become a very famous advice. And every practitioner of vipassana knows this advice given by the Buddha. And that is, let there be seeing with regard to what is seen. Let there be hearing with regard to what is heard. Let there be sensing with regard to what is sensed. That means what is smelled, what is tasted, what is touched, and let there be just thinking with regard to what is thought. So this is a very short advice given by the Buddha, and it was enough for that ascetic, because he was a gifted person actually, although he belonged to another teaching. So he practiced following this short advice of the Buddha, and it is said that before Buddha reached back to the monastery, he became an arahant, and then he came to the Buddha and asked to ordain him. But Buddha knew that he could not become a monk in that life. So Buddha said, "We do not ordain those who have no ropes and bowls, and so you go and fetch the ropes and bowls." And so he went out to fetch ropes and bowls, and he was attacked by a cow, and then he died. So when you see something and you stop at just seeing, you are putting an end to suffering regarding that object. So regarding that object, since you have no attachment or no aversion towards the object, you do not get any unwholesome state from that object. And so you are able to avoid karma, which will send you to the four woeful state. And so the ability to take the object as it is actually the ability to make an end of suffering. If we can take every object as it is, then the putting an end of suffering will be complete. But we are not able to do that now. So with regard to one, two objects, we may be able to stop at just seeing, hearing, and so on. But even I think that is desirable than not getting anything at all. So this is the immediate result, say, we get from the practice of vipassana. Now, people think that they don't get immediate results. Nowadays, people are very oriented towards getting results. But this is the immediate result you get from the practice of vipassana or the mindfulness meditation. So you don't get attached to the object, or you don't have aversion or anger towards the object. And so with regard to that particular object, there is no more suffering for you. So you are making an end of suffering regarding that object. So if you can make the end of suffering regarding every object, then your freedom from suffering will be complete. So please do not think that even if you do not get great results from the practice, you are getting this immediate result every time, every moment you apply mindfulness to the objects. And to achieve this, you just need to pay attention to the object and take it as it is without any additions. So it seems, or it sounds very simple, but it needs a determination and strenuous effort to achieve this. So by the practice of mindfulness, or by constant observation, may we be able to take the objects as they are and avoid mental defilements regarding these objects, so that ultimately, say, we are able to realize the total purity of mind. Thank you.